Morning, everybody. Now, I would like us to think this morning about the theme of intercession, i.e. praying for other people. And I say us because you're all going to have a part in this. You're going to do some work at some point. And I'll tell you later on what it is going to be. To begin with, a few questions. If you think about praying for other people, and you know, this is no test. Richard is not sitting at the back counting who's put their hands up and who hasn't. Just put your hand up. No, you're not. Just put your hands up if you pray regularly at home for your friends and family. Almost everyone. And who of you prays regularly for this country, say this town, the government, the Queen? And who of you prays regularly for events that happen in the wider world? Oh, quite a few of you, well done. Now, and who of you sometimes finds it difficult to pray for these events? Yeah, great, I'm not the only one. It is interesting to see that almost all of us pray regularly for the people we know, but less so for the wider world. And I wonder why that is. So I'll tell you how I came to choose today's topic and what thoughts I had, because that made me realize that I sometimes struggle to pray, or it reminded me of that I sometimes struggle to pray for what's going on in the world. Now, last month, I went to Poland to see some friends of mine who live there. And I made a trip from where they live to Auschwitz, the concentration camp in Poland, which was something I had been wanting to do for many years. And this time I thought, it's going to happen. And you may know that this was the largest Nazi concentration camp in the World War II. And I learned there that at least 1.1 million Jewish people lost their lives there, as well as thousands of others, political prisoners, usually from Poland, homosexuals, gypsies, Russian prisoners of war, and others who were opposed to the Nazi regime. Now, on the day of my visit, the weather was glorious. And the barracks, where during the war hundreds and hundreds of people had lived, were clean. The roads were clean. The sun was shining. And when my friend picked me up afterwards and asked me how it had been, I said it was almost surreal. It was just so, such a contrast between the nice weather and the cleanliness of the place, while you knew that thousands and thousands of people found a grueling death there. And particularly in 1944, thousands of people a day ended up in the gas chambers. And if they wanted more people to die than there was space in the gas chambers, they gave them an eggshot. And I actually read a book that I bought there that was written by a man whose name I can't pronounce, so I haven't written it down. He was a Jewish pathologist from Hungary. And he was among the thousands of Jewish people from Hungary taken to Auschwitz in June 1944. And it was at that point in time, as I've already said, that the destruction of the Jewish people, because that's the word they used, was at its height. Now, this man ended up working for the famous or infamous Dr. Mengele, the one who did all these lovely, well, in between brackets, of course, medical experiments on people. And he was one of the few to survive Auschwitz. And shortly after the war, he wrote a book about his experiences. And he wrote in grueling detail what was going on in the gas chambers and the crematoriums, and how many people were killed, as I already said, you know, with a neck shot when there were more people in the camp than they could handle in the gas chambers. And I don't know what about you, but having been there, I tried to imagine what that was like, not just the number, but also that people are capable of doing things like this to other human beings. Now, I know that on the continent, a lot of people after the war, and especially after what happened in Auschwitz, said, we can't believe in a God anymore. And I wondered how I would have prayed about it if I had lived in those days and known about it. I know that some of you lived through World War II, but probably didn't know about all this until later. And I wasn't sure how I could pray about this because it's so overwhelming. And then, of course, it didn't stop there. Since then, we've had, just to name a few, the war in Vietnam, in Korea, the genocide in Rwanda. And at present, wars are going on in Iraq, in Syria, just to name a few. And nowadays, you can't listen to the news or read a newspaper, or there has been an earthquake, a hurricane, a terrorist attack, a car bomb, or a terrible accident. Just from yesterday's news, another car bomb in Mogadishu, the capital of Somalia, and a serious bus accident in Nepal, killing, I think, 40 or 60 people. And you know, I don't know what about you, but I sometimes struggle to pray about these events. Sometimes it's not only that I don't know what to pray, but sometimes I just feel a bit like, oh yes, yet another thing to pray for. And it sounds awful, but sometimes it just makes me a little bit discouraged and I feel so overwhelming and then I can't pray at all. So I thought it might be something to talk about and think through this morning together. So when I turned to the Bible to see how people there pray for difficulties or what advice we're giving on how to pray, I actually made an interesting discovery. I looked at the Psalms and I realized that in the Psalms, David and others often, apart from praising God, pray for themselves and the people of Israel. If they refer to other people, it's often by asking God to destroy their enemies or to at least remove them from their lives. They don't seem to be praying for the well-being of other people. So then I thought, okay, let's see what the New Testament has to say. So I turned to Paul's and Peter's letters in particular because I know that they encourage their readers, usually at the end of their letters, to pray. And I realized it is mainly to pray for the advance of the kingdom. That is really central in the letters. And no doubt there will have been political problems or natural disasters in their days, but neither Paul nor Peter mention these as a topic for prayer. The only exception I could find is Paul's suggestion somewhere where he asks or suggests people to pray for those in power, but he adds so that you can live a quiet life. And Paul's and Peter's exhortations are in line with the Lord's Prayer because Jesus taught us to pray, "Thy kingdom come, thy will be done." When speaking of intercessory prayer, the New Testament focuses heavily on spreading the good news of Jesus, the advance of the kingdom. Clearly, Paul knew very well of the imperfection of this world. That's what the passage Lorinda read is all about. All of creation, is groaning, he writes. It is in bondage to decay. And we see that around us every day. Now, sometimes I'm a little bit black and white. So I thought, well, does that then mean that it is wrong to pray for people who are sick, for the needs of the world? Because the Bible doesn't literally seem to encourage us to do that. I don't think so. Over the centuries, Christians have done this. And many prayers have been written to help us pray for others and the world around us. There are beautiful examples of that in the Common Book of Prayer that some of you may be familiar with. And it made me think, what should the focus of our prayers for others be? And how should we pray for others? Well, I'm going to leave that one for you to think about. What I want us to focus on this morning is, if we do pray for the needs of the world, how do we pray? How do you pray? Now, at this point, I'm going to give all of us a small task. You may have seen the pencils in the paper on the table at the front. I'm going to ask you to write a prayer for a specific situation that comes to your mind, or perhaps a prayer you often pray, or maybe how you pray. You may say, well, I pray best when I go out for a walk. Or you may say, I may pray best when I wash the dishes, for those who, you know, don't have a dishwasher. And try to write a prayer for the needs of the world, not for your friends or family. It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be sophisticated. One or two sentences will be sufficient. Think of how you can pray for the needs of the world and write it down. Now, in a minute, I'm going to ask Phil to play us a CD so we can listen to some music while we're writing this. And afterwards, I will read out some of your prayers, and I've had Angie to try and use some of them in her prayers after the sermon. So I need two volunteers to hand out paper and pencil. And we're going to take about 5-6 minutes for this, so maybe you can play the CD now, Phil, and then we, you know, can take some time to do this. Now, I'm not going to read all of them out. I think it would be nice if we can put them here at the table after the service, or maybe put them up in the hall. I'm just going to choose randomly a few that I've got here in my hands. Someone here says, Lord, I pray for the people who have recently lost family or friends in the recent storms, sorry, I miss a few words here, in the Caribbean and for the bushfires in America. Someone here says, I'm overwhelmed by the chaos New World is in. So many wars and famines and natural disasters. Innocent children are orphaned and maimed. I feel so weak and helpless, but I know that you are all powerful. Nothing is impossible for you. Someone here praying for the work of Sam's Purse. Someone praying for the people in their streets. Someone here says, I often pray very short prayers, more like thoughts, as I hear of events on TV or radio, and they add a specific prayer for the refugees from Burma crossing to Bangladesh, that there may be provision, protection, and comfort for those most vulnerable. Apologies if I haven't read your prayer out, but as said, there are too many to, you know, it would take up maybe a bit too long, and you can read them for yourself. Now, initially, I didn't think of it that way, but while I was preparing, I suddenly realized that actually this fits in very well with the theme that we sort of have followed over the last few weeks, months, of what is in your hands, because it is actually about what is in your hands. We all can pray. Everyone in this room can pray. And God doesn't request or require eloquence or beautiful words. You don't have to have the guts to stand up front here. But at home, in the quiet of your own home, all of you can pray. So take it as a word of encouragement when you think of the needs of the world. And I would suggest that you take some time after the service to read some of the prayers that others have written, because it may give you ideas of how you can pray. It may give you some encouragement. And the interesting thing was also that when I then opened the magazine, there is an article from Janet which starts with, what have you got in your hands? And that's all about praying for your neighbors. So clearly, Janet and I, although we went in slightly different directions, had similar thoughts about that the importance of prayer and that we can all pray. And I hope that both her article and what I've shared this morning will help you to pray for what's going on in the world and maybe pray more often. I mean, I often don't get around to praying for the needs in the world, and there is so much going on. But what I do, and probably some of you do as well, is use a prayer guide. Now, in case you don't know what it is, there are lots of Christian organizations who publish a booklet every quarter or so, or every month, with items to pray about that are related to their work. And if you don't know how to pray, because it's so much, you may want to think of an organization or a specific part of the world that you're interested in, and you may try and get their magazine. And if you don't know how to go about it, I'm sure that Steve and myself will be happy to talk it through with you to see what would suit you. You know, there are organizations like Tear Fund, Open Doors, BMS. I expect that Sam Spurs has its own prayer guide. And that might just give you some practical help of what to pray for and how to pray, so that you don't always have to think of the words yourself. And finally, when I don't know how to pray for a difficult situation or don't have much time, I often just say, Lord, have mercy. God doesn't need us to use many words because he knows our heart. And take encouragement from Paul's words as well, what we read from Romans. We do not know what to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us with groans that words cannot express. So we can call on him to help us to pray when we don't know how to pray for this world. Angie, can I ask you to lead us in prayer? And if you want to use some of these, go ahead. It's up to you how you do that. Thank you.